Bobrovsky, Sam Nation Talk Radio, 790 KABC. And yes, if you missed the Obama speech, was that Baghdad Bob? Remember him? Closing days of the Iraqi invasion, the Minister of Information of the Saddam Hussein regime proudly declaring that there was no problem. Nothing happened. Nothing here to see. What economy is he talking about? I guess, you know, if you're a Silicon Valley titan or you're a real estate poobah, the economy's been pretty good for you. But let's just take a look at this. Our national debt up what? 125%? The actual dollars that we owe up 125% in the last 8 years. A record number of people out of the workforce. Completely. They're gone. They've given up. And that's the whole discussion of jobs, that's a shell game. And you know it because you know people that have given up, that are either have decided to permanently retire or to just ghost out or do something to, they can't find work. Or people, I'm sure you know, people who are severely and significantly underemployed. And of course, this nonsense about this post-racial America. I mean, here, think about how offensive this is. I'm listening because it's important to look at what he's saying. Because it's important, it's a clue as to what he's going to do in the next 8 years. I want to talk about that. I'm already saying 8 years because I suspect that we're going to, you know, if everything works out here, the expectations for Trump are so low that he's likely to exceed them. I mean, even Meryl Streep might end up being, you know, cautiously optimistic 2 years from now. So there's a chance. Look, there's a strong chance that whether it's 4 or 8, we got a Trump presidency coming up. And Obama is positioning himself for a role. You know, he doesn't have a gig to go back to. It's not like he has a business, okay? It's not like he had a career. This now I'm going to use his term because he's been talking about white folk and man and all that stuff to us for the past hour. So I'm going to say the dude never had a real job, okay? So he's going to go back to what he knew, which was community organizer. And this speech, you know, when we're talking about him going through this laundry list of his successes and adding, I don't know, the Iran, you know, we halted Iran's nuclear program without firing a single shot. Is he serious? Baghdad Bob, Iran is on course for a nuclear weapon. I think pretty much everybody is willing to accept that. So anyway, what's he up to? What is Obama planning? And this is it. He's already talking about this thing is a campaign speech. You know, if those of you who are not 18, okay, listening to me right now, we've been through a few of these turnovers before, haven't we? Let's rewind. Let's go back 8 years and talk about Bush. You know, I mean, of course, I understand it was a different thing. You know, Bush certainly had, you know, some wins against him. He was not a popular person. But at any rate, there were no campaign speeches at the end of the Bush years. And Bush, of course, faced, just as Obama does, a similar threat. In other words, his entire legacy, fighting terror. Okay. What did Obama Obama promised? Withdrawal from Afghanistan, withdrawal from Iraq, closing of Gitmo, reversing NSA spying. I mean, he didn't end up doing many of those things. But it was it, but Obama ran as the anti-Bush, just as Trump ran as the anti-Obama. And so when Bush was leaving office, and I am no great fan of President Bush, but when he was leaving office and Obama was on his way in to replace him, Bush was the epitome of class. And he also recognized that his time was over. It was done. He was, well, it was time for him to retire. And I think it was pretty clear that Bush wanted to go back to Texas and leave the, you know, lead a quiet life. Well, he started painting, right? That's true. Yeah, he, you don't know this? You know, Bush has become a kind of a prolific painter. His paintings, I don't know if they're very good. I've seen some of them, but he gives them out as gifts to people, and they're not bad. They're not bad. But anyway, this is not what Obama is going to do. You know, when he's referencing these his words, you know, he's got this, you know, all the words: change, hope, okay, democracy, opportunity, fair share, and then he gets into race relations. He's setting up an agenda. He's setting up an agenda for himself, for his post-White House years. And I think it's going to be, it's actually unprecedented. I cannot remember, certainly not in my lifetime, a former president being thus engaged. Look, for Clinton, it was always about money. All right. So when Clinton, they set up the Global Initiative, you know, who are we kidding? Now, the election's over. We can admit this now. We can talk about this freely. For Clinton, it was always a racket. You know, how am I going to travel around the world, eat really fine, fancy food, fly in private jets, you know, stay in five-star hotels? Well, easy. I'm going to start a charity. And it really was, you know, I mean, he took some cracks at Bush here and there, but it was really never about a movement. But Obama, on one hand, you could say he's in a full-fledged panic because he's got, you know, he's got the Trumpster hot on his tail and is about to blow out his entire legacy. And Trump is sitting there saying, I'm going to start dismantling this stuff. Brick by brick, I'm taking down the house that Obama built. And if you're looking at it, you know, and you got Obama, and I see it all over social media. You know, and you don't even have to watch the Golden Globes to realize how panicked the left is. And so you know what's going to happen, and talk about polarizing. This is what's going to, I mean, you're going to have, Obama is setting himself up to be this shadow leader of the opposition. And I don't mean in the shadows. I very much mean in the spotlight. But shadow only in the sense that it becoming an alternate non-government government. He's positioning himself for this. He wants to remain. And this is his ego, too, right? This is a function of the Obama ego. And it is going to be spectacular. We are going to have so much fun here. I promise. Because Obama won't be able to let it go. He's going to be putting his nose in this every 2 minutes. This wasn't a farewell speech. This is what it got billed as. This is what we, you know, we heard today. Obama's going to go to Chicago. He's going to go and he's got 20,000 people. By the way, tomorrow we're going to figure out the real truth of how many people showed up. But, you know, they've kept that number really closely guarded. So I think, you know, expect some sobering reality tomorrow. But at any rate, you know, it was billed as a farewell speech. Did it sound like that to you? Not to me at all. And this is where it's going to go. This is the beginning of a new era, a new chapter in Obama's life. Now I'll tell you this. I'm listening to this. I want to talk about the race stuff here for just to humor me for just 1 second. You know, I understand when you're a community organizer. Well, that what that really means is that you are taking one group and you're stirring up their grievances against another group. You're saying, I'm going to represent you. You need my help. You need this. You need that. But really what you're doing is you're saying, look at all the things you're not getting. Look at all the ways that America has screwed you. Look at all the ways you're forgotten at the expense of them over there. This is no different than a Gossip Girl in high school. No, junior high. Who's going, hey, Sally, did you see what Susan did about it? Did you see what she said? Oh my, did you see how she looked at you? That's what it is. And it is so pathetic, sad, and disturbing when words like that come out of a president's mouth. And I'm done hearing about all the bad and horrible and disturbing things that Trump says. Nothing Trump has said is as bad as when a sitting president sits here and lectures me and you about white folk. You know, white folk need not look at minorities, you know, and say, hey, you know, what, I mean, this stuff, this whole speech was about, you know, look at what you're not getting. Look at what you haven't been given. Look at all the ways that we're not right yet. The fundamental thing that Obama missed in his presidency is he could have said, all right, enough is enough. In this speech, you know, he talks about Jim Crow. He goes, hey, we're fools to think we can erase Jim Crow. You know, you don't begin to erase the past until you move on. It's like a relationship. You ever been in a bad relationship? Oh, it helps to dwell on it, right? After it's over. You know, if you think about it a lot, you keep bringing it up. You keep her number in your phone. Keep pictures of her out on your mantle, right? No! This is the worst advice ever! Here's what you do. What happened was wrong. You condemn it. And then you say, now we are going to begin treating people like people. Not, oh, we have these Asians over here and these blacks and these Hispanics and we have, no, gays and straight and transsexual, what, I mean, it's ludicrous. Men, women. You go, no, you're a human being. And from this day forward, you know what? Guess who gets the job? The most qualified person. And the first black president could have done that. He could have done it. He had the moral high ground as a success story, as a minority who succeeded, as someone who went to college, not just college, great college. He could have done that. His story, Michelle Obama's story, could have been the story that could have been inspirational. And more importantly, it could have been the foundation, the bedrock of an opportunity to turn a page. But from the very first moments of Obama's presidency, you know, the glimmer, like little things, I don't want to say little things, but just, I mean, remember when he waded into Trayvon Martin? Do you remember that? He's the son I never, you know, I mean, you know, didn't wait for any information to come in. Did it, made it immediately about race. Immediately about race. And it framed every argument, every idea of his that had anything to do with how we relate to one another. And so he's right only in the sense that we are polarized. We are divided. But Obama's the one who missed this opportunity to bring us together. He really could have done it. And when I listen to this speech, I'm reminded of the speech he gave on the night he was elected, also in Chicago. And you know what? That speech sounded very similar to this one. Only he hadn't had 8 years to show us just how incompetent he is at achieving all of his rhetoric. And back then, I listened to him. I remember thinking, well, I didn't vote for this guy. I didn't give him. I I didn't give him my vote, but you know what? I can give this guy a chance. Maybe we got an opportunity here to do something. And that's the thing. We had our chance. He had his chance. And now we're right back to square one. And we're probably worse off than we ever were. All right. When we come back, I'll give you a few examples here. And also, Golden Globes, Meryl Streep. I want to give you some perspective on that, too. Back after this. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KABC.
This is Sweet James Bergener. I listen to Sam Nation.
News.
Talk.
Evolve. Talk Radio 790 KABC.
And we're back. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC. All right, so talking about this Obama speech. Well, I mean, this is the craziest thing because it's everything that he has. It's delusional. That's what it is. It's the word. You know, remember when we talked a couple weeks ago, I told you that that people inside of the Obama administration, Valerie Jarrett and others, were talking about the scandal-free administration. And I was laughed. I mean, Benghazi, Libya, you know, that was top to bottom mess up. We later learned, and we talked about this here, that, you know, they really only went after Gaddafi. Gaddafi sent an emissary to Washington to say, hey, I'm giving up whatever you guys want. You know, I'm ready to even go into retirement. But Hillary and Obama had this idea. They wanted to remove him. And they did it. And they violently overthrew him, created an enormous power vacuum, basically repeated the mistakes of the Bush administration that were done in Iraq. And mistakes that Obama ran on in the election in 2008. You know, he ran against, I should say. And here we are, 8 years into this, and it's total delusion, total crap. And the guy that gets a Nobel Peace Prize and yet is the only president who served two terms and had the entire two term, had no peacetime during the entirety of his presidency. It's a real statistic. It's crazy. So all this nonsense, and of course, then there are the Golden Globes. I didn't watch them because I'm done watching award shows. I am. And I try to ignore all this news, and can I tell you why? It's simple. I want to enjoy movies. I don't want to hear you, Meryl Streep, what you think politically. I don't give a rat's rear end about your political opinions. I think you're a fine actress. I like your material. I want to enjoy your movies. I want to see you become different characters and to wow me with your talent. What I don't care about is who you are. Now, I don't mind to say, it's true. Look, this, well, it wasn't just what she said about Trump. And the thing about it, the disabled reporter mocking. I saw a montage once of all the times Trump mocked all these different people. And, you know, they weren't, you know, handicapped. They didn't have any disabilities. He was mocking other people. And he has one single mannerism. Look, I'll call him out on it. If he really was mocking a handicapper, so I'd tell you. But I'm not here to carry water for anybody, but I'm just telling you it's an absurd report. I saw this montage. Trump isn't Meryl Streep. You're right, Meryl. He's not a great actor. You know, he has one imitation that he does for people he doesn't like, and he does this thing with he flails his arms. But he does it not... It's not a handicap thing. Anyway, So you can watch the montage. It's online, and you know it, you know. Well, yeah, we'll put it up on the website. But it's for you to judge. I saw it. This whole thing's a fake thing. It just is. But did you miss the little thing about Natalie Portman? You know, she's naming all the people that she's so stupid that she thinks that Trump's going to deport Hollywood. Yeah, she can't really believe this. She's a moron. If she actually believes that, she's an idiot. So she names all the Ryan Gosling. Oh, he's so nice. He's from Canada. And goes through the whole list, naming everybody by their country of origin. And then she gets to Natalie Portman, who happens to have been born in a country named Israel. Well, if you're a leftist in Hollywood, you can't even say the word. So she says Jerusalem. She can't even say Israel. She's such a left-wing nut. So here's the deal, Meryl. Just let me enjoy your movies. You and I, we just want to go to the movies and have a good time. And we don't want to hear all about these stars' politics. All right. Is California in trouble? If you look at these U-Haul statistics, U-Haul statistics, you will probably think we are. And I'll tell you what I mean right after this. Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC. If you're not a Trump supporter, I get it. Fine. If you think that he's going to be Hitler and putting everybody in boxcars and shipping them off and left and right, you're crazy. Turn off MSNBC. Unsubscribe to your Huffington Post alerts. Pull your head out of your you-know-what and relax. This country's not going to hell in a handbasket. It's not happening.
Talk radio.
790 KABC.
And we're back. Sam Rejofsky here. Sam Nation Talk Radio, 790 KABC. I was up in Oregon today for a meeting, a client meeting, and so flying up and then having a meeting and then flying back to get here in time to have our chat. And I'm flying across, you know, I'm flying across up through California. We flew over basically over Fresno, the Central Valley. We have a big state. It's kind of like we've got a big country. Anyway, we've talked about this on the program, how the media, the elites, they don't get it because there's all these pockets in America, not pockets, huge parts of the country that just have been totally missed by this, you know, imaginary, you know, Obama economy that's risen the tide for everybody, right? Well, it's the same here in California. Have you ever driven on the 99? By the way, today I just flew over it, so I belong to the elites. But I mean, have you driven up it? You know, it's a great article by Victor David Davis Hanson, and he actually lives in the Fresno area. He lives on a farm in rural California, and he talks about how it's the world apart from what you and I have. You know, if we are West LA or I'm Orange County, or maybe you live in San Francisco, the Bay Area. The economy in California is very fragile. And he cites the statistic. It has to do with U-Hauls. You know that, so the U-Hauls are, people rent them and then return them. But they, unlike rental cars, they don't get always returned to the same place. Duh, because people are moving from point A to point B. Well, the returns in California are a fraction of the outs, right? Of the ones that are checked out. So there's these franchises, the U-Haul franchises are having a problem retaining U-Hauls. Now, he doesn't talk about this in the article, but I'm reading it. I'm looking at it. I say, look, you know, who uses a U-Haul? Well, you know, it's not the millionaires, okay, that are using the U-Hauls. I mean, they're hiring movers and that type of thing. It's probably not even middle class, you know, upper middle class people. But middle class, lower middle class, working class people are renting U-Hauls. They don't have the money to hire a moving company. But so record number of people are leaving the state. And then you've got this issue, and this is important to talk about because we've got, on a national level, we've won the fight. We finally have some common sense coming to Washington. But aren't you a little bit worried that our state is digging its heels in and has decided to make itself, to continue to make itself, but now even more so, this liberal fortress and a source of obstruction to the progress that's finally coming to Washington? You think about this. Do you realize 60% of our budget in California, 60% of all the costs, the money that it takes to run the state, most of which, by the way, are public sector pensions, okay? That comes, 60% of it comes from tax dollars, from income tax dollars. And who pays those taxes? That's interesting. It's 80% of the taxes come from the top 10% taxpayers. That's crazy. What happens when the economy goes south for tech, for real estate? What happens? It's a house of cards. And when we come back, I want to talk about this because it's really, you look at these indicators, and there are key indicators here where California really is dangerous. And I want to hear from you. I think there are indicators here that show that our state is not headed in the right direction. And as we dig our heels in and try to obstruct other things that are, immigration, all these issues. So give us a call. I want to hear from you. 800-222-5222. 800-222-5222. And we'll be back to talk about our wonderful state. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KBC.
This is Sweet James Bergener. I listen to Sam Nation.
The phone lines are open now.
Right now?
Right now.
At 800-ABC-KABC. That's 800-222-5222.
And Sam Rogowski here, Sam Nation Talk Radio, 790 KBC, talking about California and how this state is going to need some help. We got some callers. Let's get to it. It's been a little while. So Bikron, am I pronouncing that right?
It's Bikron, but you're good. No
Bikron.
One ever gets it right.
I'm sorry. Well, my last name nobody gets right either. So there we go. But so what? Tell me about. So what? You can't buy a house. Talk to me about that.
I'm 27 years old. I have $80,000 saved, so I got a 20% down payment easily for a $400,000 house. And I make $65,000 a year, and I still can't afford a house. I'm just wondering, with this income and this down payment, if I can't afford a house, how is anyone supposed to afford a house? I don't know how much longer the market can keep up these high prices. It's insane.
Well, I think, so it's interesting, the house prices, We have this economy where it's driven by a lot of high incomes that are in the state, and then you've got a whole lot of incomes, right? You got a whole lot of people who make very, very little. I mean, that's what the statistics bear out. But it's crazy because we still have this very, in spite of all the terrible things about California, still have this really desirable state to live in, theoretically at least, but. You know what's crazy is think about, I mean, how much of your income, how much do you pay in state taxes? Do you know every year? How much of your income goes up in smoke just in California taxes?
I don't know about California, but I know each paycheck, 30% of it goes to taxes in general.
It's crazy because you can't, in this state with 30% of your income gone, I mean, it's not like living in Texas, is it? In Texas, they take no income tax or very little. What is it? Zero in Texas. And then you can buy a house for $250K, a huge house. Yeah, it is frustrating. It is. And then the regulations on top of everything. You know, you can't You can't move in the state without getting regulated. And the interesting thing is that the regulations in the state, you know, it, for example, if you were to buy a house and had to follow up with all the local and state codes and all the different, you know, requirements that are put on you. You know what's interesting is the way that all of these rules and regulations are applied. They're applied against people that are law abiding, but not against people that aren't. You know, they did a study where they showed all these people out there who, you know, you drive by the house that has the porta potties in the front yard and has the, you know, the rusting cars in the back and everything. And it's, but the enforcement people know that they can't enforce that, that the person won't pay. Instead, they harass people who they know can pay. And the cost of enforcement is an unequal burden, you know, shouldered by people like you who might just barely be making it, although you're making a great income on nationally. But here it doesn't get you what you need. So I hear you. And thank you so much for calling. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Sam.
You got it. We have Mike in Reseda. You want to talk about taxes? Mike, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can. How are you?
I am great. Thanks for having me on the show. Really appreciate it.
No problem. Happy to do it. So talk to me. What are you thinking?
Okay, this is what's going on here. All right, I agree with you 100% how the higher income earners are the ones fronting the bill for a lot of the taxes. I agree with you. But, you know, this is part of the issue. I run a repair shop. The repair shop that I ran before I got there, this owner was doing $33,000 a month at a 54% profit margin. After I took over, in a year, the business is doing $110,000 at a 75% profit margin. Now, let me ask you this. How much of a raise do you think my technicians got or myself? Zero. So we keep making them richer and richer, and we get nothing back in return. Now, if they paid us a fair wage for what we did, now instead of going on Craigslist and hiring a mechanic to fix my car, they can afford to go to the repair shop. What employers cease to remember is when you don't pay your employee fair for what he's earned, he can't go do business somewhere else. So when they talk about Joe the plumber with President Barack Obama, give me the tax breaks. Give it to me. No, give it to the people, because if you don't give it to the people, they can't afford you, Joe the plumber.
Yeah,
so
no, you're...
understand that. This guy put 200 grand into his kitchen.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely... Mike, I'm up against the clock. I'm going to address this when we come back. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC. You know, if you listen to this program, we don't really get lost here on feelings. We don't get lost in how we feel. It's about the reality of the situation.
Talk Radio 790
KABC.
And we're back. So... Sam Rzhovsky here, talking about California. And Mike's absolutely right. You know, you run a business, you start making more money, and next thing you know, you really aren't, because you've got your all of your rising expenses, and you've got different benchmarks. You know, I remember when we hit that magic 50, you know, employees. So, you know, when the state of California suddenly decides that you're not a small business anymore, it is punishing. It is punishing to the point where I wonder if there really is a great motivation to grow and build your business. Because it's one thing if you've got the scale, if you're Facebook, you know, and you got billions and billions, it's one thing. And so these people, you know, these guys, they can sanctimoniously sit up there and claim, yeah, absolutely, you know, benefits for employees and mandated this and that. But, you know, it's tough to do when you're a small business. It really is. And the state makes a lot of very arbitrary decisions. There is a great story out there that reminded me of Sweet James. I've got to mention this. Did you hear about what's going on with Angelina Jolie? You know, she's getting divorced, big, big divorce, and she's hired one of the top divorce attorneys in L.A. And this gal has advice. She gives great advice to her clients. What it is, she tells them, look, stay out of the press. Let me handle it. Protect the kids. You know, do it. And I've got my rules. Well, the New York Post is talking about how Jolie's gone rogue on her, and that Depp did this. He was also a client of this lady's before, and he went rogue on her too. And I'm talking to Sweet James about it. And, you know, the interesting thing is, when you've got clients as an attorney, know, they don't always listen to you. I mean, they hire you, but they don't always listen to you. And sometimes, a lot of times when they don't listen to you, it really hurts their cases, which is what's going on here with the Jolie divorce. And I'm talking to Sweet James about it. And, you know, if you have an injury, you've got an accident, you've got to call him. He's the lawyer we trust. But I always say that he's the lawyer we trust, but you need to trust him too. And if you've got a good lawyer in your corner and he's protecting you, you know, listen to him. Follow his instructions. You know, we lawyers, we always talk about this, how, you know, the client that just doesn't do what you need, and then it totally hurts their case. Well, anyway, I'll talk to you more about this as the weeks go on, because it's an interesting thing, and I totally relate to it. All right, we are out of time. We'll be back tomorrow with plenty of things to talk about, 7 p.m. John Wolf is up with the news next. See you later.
Talk Radio 790
AABC.